Good morning and welcome to HealthWorks. This is Carol Kinnear, Community Relations Manager for Wayne Memorial Hospital. Thank you for joining us today. We are in October. I can't believe where the time gone, right? Yeah. my guest today is Dr. Meredith Hellstern. Hi. Good morning, Dr. Hellstern.
Good morning.
And you've been on the show before.
Sure.
And I love having you on the show because, because the information that you provide, I feel, is so helpful to our community, to, everyone who listens. And you are the medical director for the Wayne Memorial Community Health Center's pediatric offices.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. I got that. It's a long title.
It is a very long title.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And so, the community health centers, I always like to say, they are not the hospital.
Right.
You are your own identity.
Right.
I like to look at you guys as like the primary care services within
right.
our community.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah.
Pediatrics being one of them. I invited on this show today. Actually, we both agreed that we wanted to do this show together.
Yeah.
Right?
Absolutely.
So we're going to talk a little bit about autism, about mm-hmm. vaccines, mm-hmm. and kind of, just bring clear, concise information to our community.
Right.
So do you want to begin? Tell us a little bit about yourself, first of all.
Oh, okay. So I've been a community pediatrician here at Wayne Community Health Centers for 12 years now.
Wow.
So I've been here for 12 years, and then I practiced for 3 years prior to, no, 4 years prior to that in Virginia. So I've been doing this for 16 years now. So I've had a lot of time to spend with kids and their families and to learn a lot. And, I think one of the reasons that I really love this job is that it's never the same day twice.
Right.
And it's always an opportunity to learn and to, further my own education and to grow. And, medicine is an ever-changing field, and there's always something new coming down the pike and something new to learn about and study about, and I think that's a big part of it.
Right.
So that's really one of the reasons I love my job. So.
Yes, and we love having you here, too.
Thank you.
It's great. So we're going to, like I said, talk about a couple of topics today. Autism. What is autism?
Autism has had lots of different definitions over the years and lots of different diagnoses and lots of different lists of symptoms and things. So really, if you go back in literature even, you can find descriptions of characters and things as far back as the 1700s and 1800s,
wow.
if you're looking back and reading about people that really probably fit the bill as autistic people
mm-hmm.
Or people with autism. Or people on the spectrum. There are a lot of different ways to refer to them. The original diagnosis probably came out 1910 or 11.
Mm-hmm.
And originally included a diagnosis criteria that said that the patient was not verbal or not able to speak. And so sometimes it was characterized as quote unquote childhood schizophrenia. So that was originally what it was thought to be associated with, was a mental health condition. But we've really, over the years and over many iterations of that diagnostic criteria, we've changed it a lot. And it really now is categorized as a spectrum of symptoms. And there are a lot of different symptoms on that list. And so really it's differences in how people communicate, how they play, how they behave, how they learn. And so it can vary very widely from
mm-hmm.
person to person to person. And so what one person does and thinks and feels and acts is very different from how another person that's on the spectrum does and feels and thinks and acts. And so when you say that you're autistic, well, you don't look like a person with autism. Well, nobody looks
right.
like a person with autism.
And
I think it's really important for people to know that people with autism and are fully functioning, great, lovely, wonderful people, members of society.
Exactly.
And they can do anything and everything that they want to do.
Mm-hmm.
They have full capabilities to do whatever they want to do. They might need a little bit of extra support. And the earlier that they get that support and the more support they have, I think is a great way for them to interact throughout their lives. They can hold down jobs just like everybody else.
Right.
And they can play sports and they can go to medical school and they can, you know, they can be teachers and leaders and parents and friends and do all of those things. And so I don't think there's any limitations on the things that they can do.
Right, exactly. And I can't agree with you more. You know, we've also seen too a comment made that we're seeing more people diagnosed with autism. Is there a reason for that?
I think so, yes. Since that original diagnosis was discussed over 100 years ago now, a lot of the diagnoses criteria has changed. And even just in the last 15 to 20 years, really since I graduated from medical school myself, the diagnostic criteria has gotten longer. So that list of diagnoses that you have that qualifies you as somebody on the spectrum has gotten longer. And so when you make that list a little bit longer, then more people are going to be included on that list. But the other thing that you have to consider with that is that about 12 or 13 years ago now, back in 2013, the American Psychological Association, so the people who are in charge of writing up these diagnoses, developed a new broader diagnosis of autism that included some other diagnoses with it. So some people may be familiar with the term Asperger disorder or sensory processing disorder or pervasive developmental disorder. And so those things all got sort of recategorized under the diagnosis of autism spectrum disorder. And so when you're adding three or four or five other diagnoses into that list, then yeah, of course you're going to have an increase in the number of diagnoses because you're quadrupling the number of people that are now included in that list. And so, so yes, we have seen a sharp increase in the number of diagnoses, but I think that's because we've expanded that list a lot more. The other thing is that I think a lot of people are becoming a lot more aware. Schools are becoming more aware of what these diagnoses look like. Families are a lot more in tune with it.
Right.
We as pediatricians are being better trained in how to recognize it early. And we do a lot more screening early on. You know, starting at about a year, we do specific screens just for autism. We're doing a lot more referrals to get them to services earlier.
Right.
And so those diagnoses are happening faster, which is a good thing because the earlier you get those services in, the better.
Right. That's what exactly was I said. Going to say, you know, that is a very good thing because there are services out there. And again, with any kind of diagnosis, the earlier you diagnose, the earlier you treat, the better the outcomes overall, right?
Yeah, very much.
So, you know, I would be remiss if I didn't ask you about, you know, what has been in the news lately about the relationship of Tylenol and autism.
Right.
Can you talk a little bit about that? Okay.
Absolutely. So Tylenol or paracetamol or acetaminophen or the varying names that it goes by, and there's lots of different brands. Acetaminophen is the generic that we use, but Tylenol is the most common brand that, that you see on the shelves. So there was a study that got released several years ago that came out of Sweden where they studied several million children. And when they looked at those children in that group of 2.5 million children, children who had been diagnosed with autism versus children who had not been diagnosed with autism, one of the differences that they found was that some of those kids that were diagnosed with autism had a higher likelihood of being exposed to Tylenol when their moms were pregnant. So mom took Tylenol while she was pregnant. But when you go back and you look at that data a little bit more closely, which the same people who did that initial study did, when you look at other things that are associated with them, if you look at their siblings that mom had in later pregnancies where she also took Tylenol, they didn't necessarily have an increased risk of autism. That increased risk of autism in those kids that were exposed to Tylenol, that increased risk was less than 0.1%. It's a very small number. When you look at them, they didn't factor in other things that may have caused, you know, other associations. Like, why were these people taking the Tylenol right. in the first place? Mm-hmm. So were they taking the Tylenol because of pain? Were they taking it because they were ill and having fevers?
There are many, you know, many reasons why, right? Right.
And so were they taking the Tylenol because they were treating a condition that may be having some role to play in why that diagnosis of autism eventually came to be? Mm-hmm. So there are a lot of other factors to consider with mm-hmm. that. And so a few years later, several people looked at that study as well as many others, like 46 or more. And they found absolutely no relationships in any of those 46 studies linking Tylenol and an increased risk of autism.
Right.
So there's, you know, we have one study that may or may not mm-hmm, connect mm-hmm. Tylenol and autism, but you have 46 studies that say, no, absolutely not. And right. so you really want to look at things that have good scientific evidence to back them up.
Which is again, so important. And that's where you base your practice on, right?
Absolutely.
As a pediatrician is evidence-based. You absolutely. Have to look at all these studies,
yeah.
which is so important. Because when you look at, you know, doctors or OBGYNs
yeah.
that deal with pregnant moms, right?
Yeah.
They need to look at that risk for the mother, too, mm-hmm. that, you know, having a high fever can also be dangerous to that fetus, right?
Right?
So giving them acetaminophen
is a very important thing.
Right.
And there aren't a lot of options for pregnant moms, unfortunately,
right.
because it's not, especially as you get later into their pregnancy, pregnant moms cannot take things like ibuprofen, Motrin, or Aleve, naproxen, because there is a considerable risk to an unborn child and can cause major complications, particularly with the baby's heart, developing
right.
heart. So they cannot take those. And Tylenol has been proven many, many, many times over to be a safe alternative
mm-hmm.
to treat things like fever and aches and pains in pregnancy. And so, you know, you really have to weigh that cost and benefit and those kinds of things. And you're right, you have to have a good alternative. And if you're using it appropriately and with your doctor's,
correct.
With your doctor's okay, and
mm-hmm.
you're using it in an appropriate manner and you're taking it as directed,
mm-hmm.
Then there's not any extra risk associated
right.
with it.
Right. So, you know, I think we could probably talk more about this topic.
Oh, yeah.
And we really only have like a couple of minutes left. And I think I may have to bring you back again when you're not so busy. But, you know, another thing, too, is vaccines and
yeah.
how important they are. Like, I know it's hard for me to say to you, can you talk about vaccine in 2 minutes or less?
No.
I know. Exactly. Exactly. But how important are vaccines for our children, our community, everyone?
Vaccines are extremely important for a lot of different reasons. But the big thing that I'll touch on right now is that vaccines are extremely safe. They're extremely safe and effective, and they do their jobs very, very well. And they've done them so well that a lot of people have forgotten mm. about a lot of the diseases that they prevent. And so people think, well, nobody gets measles anymore. Yeah, because vaccines do their jobs.
Right.
And mm-hmm. so I think from a public health standpoint, we really have to think about them that way. So we have to be vaccinated to protect the people that can't be. So for the babies that are too young, for the kids that come into my office that have had kidney transplants or are undergoing treatment for leukemia that can't be vaccinated for those things, or they've had vaccinations but they're not working anymore because
mm-hmm.
their immune systems are suppressed. For the grandmas that are on Xeljanz for their rheumatoid arthritis. For anybody who might be in the hospital undergoing kidney dialysis. You have to protect those people who can't get the vaccine.
Okay.
And that's your job
mm-hmm.
as a member of society to protect the people who can't be protected.
Right.
And so it's really important for you to do that to make sure that you're going to make everybody healthy.
Mm-hmm.
Measles is extremely infectious. If somebody with measles sits in my waiting room for 5 minutes, they can infect 18 people.
Wow.
Okay?
Wow.
So think about that in
mm-hmm.
a public health situation. that's a really big deal. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, if they're sitting out there and there's a newborn out there, then they can infect that baby. And then the baby can go home and infect grandma. And then grandma can go visit her friend who gets dialysis and they can, you know. So it's not just you.
Right.
It's that many, you have to think about. People. You have to think about everybody else. Mm-hmm. And you have to think about yourself, your grandkids, your friend across the street, the ladies you go to church with. You have to think about everybody else. And it's not just a decision that you're making for yourself, but for everybody.
Right. And again, I just can't stress this enough. The information that you have provided today has been so beneficial to our community. But talk to your provider, yeah. Right? Have that connection. Yeah. Have that open communication.
Yeah.
You know, you have to look at evidence-based research. Yeah. That's what it's all about. And as a provider, that's what you do on a yeah. daily basis.
And it's these are not easy studies to read.
No.
It's very difficult mm-hmm. to sit down and read them. They're not very exciting.
we know that, yes.
But they're not, you right. know? Like, and that's what our job is mm-hmm. to take the stuff and look at all those numbers and words and charts and graphs and look at that stuff and look at those conclusions and be able to say, this is a good study. This isn't a good study. This is what we need to understand out of this study. Mm-hmm. And to be able to distill that down to you as a customer, as a patient, as a, you know, as a member of the public and right. say, this is the information that you need to know.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, these are the people that look at this information and have been trained to do so.
Right.
And that's who you should ask for right. your information. So.
Well, Dr. Hellstern, unfortunately, we are out of time. It goes really, really fast.
It does.
Phone numbers real quick. Do you want to sure. throw those in?
Absolutely. So the pediatric offices, and, you know, this is October, so it's time to go out and get your flu shots.
Right.
So our Honesdale office is 570-253-5838. Waymart is 570-488-9550. The Sterling office is 570-689-7565. And the Pike office is 570-775-4264. And we have several providers that we've recently hired probably in the last 6 months or so. So we're always taking new patients. Right. And you know, we take a large variety of insurances, and we also take folks who don't have insurance or don't have the ability to pay, and we have lots of options for those folks too.
Great. Well, thank you, Dr. Hellstern, yeah. so much for being on the show today.
Absolutely.
And again, this is Carol Kanaya, Community Relations Manager for Wayne Memorial Hospital. I want to thank you for listening and have a great day.